Welcome to Let's Talk About It, co-hosted by Maria Wyatt and Scott Dudley. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.
Good morning, Imperial Valley. You're listening to your weekly wellness radio, Let's Talk About It, with Scott and Maria.
Mic check.
We are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUBO 88.7 Radio Bilingüe. Our phone number here at the station is 337-8874.
Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning.
And as always, you can catch the podcast on KXLRadio.com. Click on Let's Talk About It, and you'll see however many podcasts happen to be on the list. Certainly this one will be there soon.
Yes. And don't miss last week's. Last week's was very interesting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The death of the American dream. That was cool. And the woman who was on the show, Heather Wyatt, no relation to Maria. Anyway,
I know.
She sent me back an email saying Maria totally nailed
Kate.
Maria kept her awake all weekend.
I know I did because of the immigration cage issue at the border.
The border has been freed for plastic things and locked down for people.
You're sent to secondary and you're put into a cage. And
how to send public administrative PhDs into a tizzy.
I know.
Give them something to chew on.
I know.
Okay.
And also, just before we start the show, reminder that this Saturday it's cattle call. The cattle call parade and rodeo Saturday and Sunday. My daughter has her boots, her cowboy hat. Oh, sorry, cowgirl hat.
Cow person.
Yeah, so she's ready. I'm ready. And also tomorrow, you know, you and I are off, and schools are closed. And
I'm off more than usual.
Yeah, and to commemorate Veterans Day, and just to say, you know, one special veteran, my dad, Ricardo Lara, he's a Korean War veteran. Mm. So, you know, that's a special day. Mm.
Saludos.
Honoring all the veterans. All the veterans of all the wars, so.
Yeah. God, we got a whole new batch of those guys, too, because now we've got this whole, they're like next gen, the iGen vets. Coming out and hanging out and welcome guys and let's take care of you guys and
especially, you know what, especially World War II, there's very few left. Slowly there, and the next one will be Korean.
Age will do that to you, you know.
Yeah, my dad's 81 years old, so.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Okay, that was Maria's community calendar brought to you
Veterans
by
and Cattle Call.
Yes, your friends at KUBO and Imperial County Behavioral Health. Back to the show. Our guest today is Joaquin Zambrano, and he's a mental health rehabilitation technician, two.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
What's a two? Is it like halfway to three or what?
Yeah, you're kind of like stuck in the middle, so trying to get over that hump.
How long have you been working with the county?
Over 3.5 years. I started back in 2008, and actually I kind of pioneered this program that we're going to be talking about today. The jail supportive transitional services. So
you came west on a covered wagon, Calistoga thing?
That's right, riding from the wind.
Nice. How was Nevada? Was that?
Yeah, shiny lights.
Nowadays, huh?
Yeah, nowadays.
So we are going to talk about a program, and we call it the jail program because we're no good with acronyms. What do you call it?
Well, the acronym is JSTS, Jail Supportive Transitional Services.
Why? How do jails and mental health cross paths?
Well, that's what they kind of wanted to do a few years back. They wanted to collaborate the justice system with the mental health and other community agencies to try to help out these people that kept, you know, going back to jail due to mental illnesses and trauma-focused people.
Is that common? I mean, is when you look at jail populations as compared to, like, non-jail populations, I guess, do jail populations concentrate people with mental illness? Are they more likely to end up in jail, or what do you get on that?
Well, they try to, you know, they sometimes look at the fact of where they live, like where they come from, you know. So some people that, like minorities, they don't have the proper assistance, or they're not properly they don't have the resources, so they sometimes commit crimes to try to get by in life, and then sometimes substance abuses get in the way. So they sometimes end up in the jail, and then when they get out, they have nobody to lead them to the proper treatment.
Mm-hmm.
So people who are marginalized and have problems and face adversity in life, some of those people may end up resorting to or thinking that it's okay even to do stuff that the rest of society considers criminal.
Correct.
And those include some persons with mental health problems.
Yes. Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. But like I said, there's repercussions to everything, so.
And people without really good lawyers.
Yeah, true.
Okay. The glove doesn't
fit. So Ed, for this program, are you stationed at the jail?
Yes, I actually do. I'm at the jail about 3 times a week. And, you know, we basically see the population that is selected by the jail staff, the medical staff there. So they screen people, and then it's kind of my job to kind of do a pre-assessment mm-hmm. to make sure they qualify. It being a small county, it's kind of sometimes you keep seeing these same people, so you kind of already know who they are, you know, and they know they
wait,
know.
Wait! Stop. Time out. The whole justice system is based on the premise that jail is something that would
fix
then reform.
Fix them.
Yes.
Fix them.
Yes. Rehabilitate your people so that you never see them again.
Right.
Ever.
Well,
go on.
We have. Wait a minute.
Lives.
Isn't California the state that has the most people jailed?
Spends the most money.
And has the most people jailed, right?
And
we have the highest population of prisoners.
And I think our recidivism is also very high. And mm-hmm. and if California is the highest in the United States, and the United States is the highest in the world, hello.
Well, we've been in the what's that organization called? The Human Rights. The United States is up there against, you know, human rights violations because we have the most people jailed.
but it's fixing everyone, so everyone will be fine in 10 to 20
or whatever. Well, the numbers don't keep going down, Scott.
Well.
They keep on going up.
That's the goal, but...
And actually, we're going to get, you know, people released from prison. When does it start?
Well, you just said, you just were kind of implying you didn't want them locked up, so that would be a good thing, right?
Well, it's because they're overcrowded, and they can't, they just don't fit in prisons anymore, so they're going to be released pretty soon and coming back to our county.
It's kind of like trying to check into a Motel 6 at 11:30 on Saturday night.
But it's going to be supposedly nonviolent.
Good. Right. So. Well, what they're trying to do is probably, like, instead of sending them out to prison, to state prisons, they're going to keep them here locally.
With you.
Yes.
Are they
talking about that down at the jail?
Yes.
Is that a hot topic?
It's a big thing between the jail and the probation department because a lot of people obviously are going to be staying down here, so they're going to have to be monitored.
But a lot of those people are going to be, like you said, nonviolent. A lot of them is because of their substance use, they got in jail. But a lot of them are using substance abuse because they're trying to cope with their mental health, too.
Right. Find it as an easy fix, kind of, it'll get rid of my problems. Yeah, but it'll get rid of your problems for an hour.
Or it'll get rid of your problems while causing 17 other ones.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Again, or repercussions. Okay, so you're down there, and you get the people that the medical staff screen. Is there a particular flavor? I mean, because I guess when I think of people who go to jail, having, you know, worked with children for many years, my brain just screams, impulse control problem. Do you get attention deficit people? Or are your people more severely, you know, is it a different flavor of mental health problem?
No, we get a wide variety. Obviously, the medical staff tries to get a history, if they have any history of treatment in the past, going back to, like I said, children, when they were children.
Does jail count as treatment, or... We don't really think of it that way.
I guess you don't really. I mean, usually if
it counts an alcohol and drug. I mean, right? I mean,
if people stay in jail for a long time, then they do end up being seen by their psychiatrist. There,
yeah, they get meds.
And then it's up to him or her to, you know, administer treatment or not. Mm-hmm. A lot of people get upset when they don't get what they get on the outside, inside. So, but different rules inside the jail.
Mm-hmm.
Different rules.
You're like a homie now, huh? What's the different rules? What's, like, is it...
You know, it's...
Do you have to bribe a guard?
It's just that... No, it's just that their psychiatrist, their treatment team doesn't do the same thing that, let's say, behavioral health does or state mental health does. So they say they're taking some kind of medication out here. They go in there and they feel like, well, I need my Seroquel, for example.
Which is a really nice tranquilizer. Helps you sleep like a baby.
Exactly. A lot of people want to sleep in jail. They just want to, you know, go through it without...
I took my Seroquel and I woke up and my sentence was over.
Exactly. Also, they'll cry when the doctor says, oh, we don't give Seroquel here in this jail.
Well, you know, you're put in a place that's more stressing, and then the stuff you had to deal with, your stress is taken away from you. I could see that being an issue.
Yeah, of course. But
would it
and
be?
It's different because, I work with the minors, and if let's say a minor is taking medication out here in the county, you know, with us, mm-hmm. and then he gets put into juvenile hall, he needs to continue with that medication.
Right.
We can't, you know, that's part of the responsibility of probation. You know, they have to continue with that medication. If they are somewhere in another different county and they end up here locked up, we still have to continue that treatment. You know, if whatever they were taking, they still have to continue it here locally. So we, with minors, we still have to continue with it.
Trying to encourage that. Yeah, and that's what we try to do too. This whole program is a full service partnership mm-hmm. program. So we try to work all together with other agencies like probation and then other mental health or county resources. So we try to get them involved, like you're saying, if they already have a probation officer, to try to get them to, okay, when you get out, you have to comply, you have to follow mm-hmm. up. And a lot of people get lost.
You know, comply has have to already implied, right? And comply
right.
There's have to's already embedded in the word.
Exactly. So it's kind of...
That's always been
why,
successful,
no,
by
no,
the way.
No, wait. But why do they get lost? I mean, right now we don't have all those people coming from the state, but we will. So I'm afraid if that word that you said, they get lost, and then we end up with more people coming from the prisons, how many more will get lost?
Oh, go ahead and scare everybody.
Yeah, I know.
I'm like, what do you mean they get lost with right now the current population we're working with?
Well, I'll give you a scenario. Let's say you spent 120 days in jail. Mm-hmm. You're not.
Maria's going to say which time?
Which year? Back in college.
So let's say you like smoke, so you smoke, and you're not getting the good things. You're not even getting Coca-Cola or nothing, mm-hmm. right? So it's like when you get out, what's the first thing you're going to want to do? You know, indulge yourself mm-hmm. in the things that you didn't have.
That you missed.
Sometimes they don't really think.
Wine, women, and song. It's like a sailor coming back to port.
Yeah.
Yeah, old days. So they go straight to their vices or whatever pleases them more. And then that whole right thing that they need to do, like follow up with mental health, kind of gets lost a little bit. They say, okay, I'll do it tomorrow. Let me mm-hmm. enjoy myself, my first day out. So then I come into the picture and try to look for these people as well. Mm-hmm. You know, I go out there and do the community outreach, go to their homes.
I wonder why you were hanging out in
I hang out everywhere from Slap
Ports,
City.
Ports of call.
from the north to Winter Haven. I've had clients in Ocotillo and all the way down south to Calexico. So I'm on all quadrants trying to look for these people and encourage them. Remember, this is a voluntary program.
Yes.
You know, I don't force them. I try to encourage them. I try to educate them on the benefits of, you know, staying out of jail and just, you know, being on treatment in order for them to just function in life, to have goals and to try to reach mm-hmm. them, you know. So, but it's sometimes tough.
What age do you see? I mean, are these just like older? I'm looking
like
at Scott.
Like me. I saw that.
Yeah.
I saw that.
Why
are you looking at his whiskers for you? I work from anything from 18 to 64.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. I've had people in their 50s, even 60s, and I've had as 18, as young as 18. So,
which ones responds better? I mean, to the services that you're offering, or just?
I would say the older population. I guess they've kind of lived life a little bit more. They've seen good. They've seen bad.
Experience is a wonderful teacher.
Yes,
It would be if you listen to it. I mean,
maybe it is. Okay, I'm 60 years old, 50 years old. Obviously, what I'm doing is not working.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll try this new thing that JSTS.
Yeah. And then, like I said, the new generation, it's kind of like, you know, it's like, I got time. I'm young. But little do they know, you know, time will, you know, fly. And if you don't do the right thing.
Now, how many people typically does the jail hold or are there, and then versus how many get referred? Do you get that breakdown?
I think there's about 350 and roughly people at this county jail right now. Maybe a little bit more, especially more.
That's quite a few.
Yeah. And like I said, I go in three times a week. I get referrals. Every time I go in, I have about two new referrals,
mm-hmm.
you know. And, you know, those people, obviously, like I said, it's voluntary, so they ask, you want to be referred to this program? They say yes. So then that's when, you know, I keep monitoring them while they're still in jail,
mm-hmm.
wait till they get released. And then that's kind of when the process is basically they have to come down to our assessment center and have a clinical psychologist assess them and then go on from there. If they meet the medical necessity, then we get the ball rolling.
So how out of those referrals, how many end up walking in your door due to your, like, what are those guys called? The guys that hunt people down?
Bounty hunter.
Yeah. You're like a metal health bounty hunter.
I feel like that sometimes, yeah.
Look at your car, dude. You're totally there.
Yeah. I would love to say about 50%, but I think that's a little high. So
out of the people who volunteer for this program, out of the referrals, one or two a day, 3 days mm-hmm. a week, so six a week. About 40%, maybe a little less than half.
Maybe less than half. Yes.
Roll in the door and say, okay, yeah, you're right, I need this.
And it feels so much better when they actually show up on their own,
mm-hmm.
when they're told, because then I get the news and like, oh, so-and-so came in. I was like, oh, wow, good.
Good.
Yeah. Yay. It feels good to, you know, that they, I kind of made a positive impact or made them understand.
Are most of your the people that you're seeing male, or have you seen a lot of females?
Oh, it's mixed.
Mixed?
Yeah. Women commit crimes too.
We do?
he says dangerously. Nice. 337-8874 is the phone number if you want to call and talk to Joaquin and share your stories of justice
but,
woe.
Well, you know what? I mean, looking, if I had a family member that I knew that maybe had some mental health issues, problems. I mean, I would like them to get the services through the jail service, the JSTS, or better known as the Jail Supportive Transitional Services.
There you go.
Ooh, you got it.
She got it. First time.
And, you know, just to link them and work with them. Do you work also with families if you can?
Yeah, that's part of that full mm-hmm. service partnership. You know, we try to involve their biggest supports, obviously being their families. You know, some people only have their mother, some people only have their father. But, you know, we try to get them involved to work as a team to try to get them to commit themselves to this good.
Yeah.
To stay out of jail.
Now, you mentioned medical necessity as like basically the initial hurdle once they've gotten out and managed to come to the front door. Mm-hmm. How accurate are you on your... Because that, ultimately, this would be a screening thing, right? Because if you screen, like, right on, then everybody who comes in meets that level, right?
Right.
So out of the people you screen, how close are we? I mean, do people get turned away because they're not sick enough?
Actually, no. They mostly, in that case, out of five, I would say one maybe gets, you know, screened away due to... it's more of a substance abuse problem. And we try to direct them to our lovely alcohol and drug program.
But they have to have with us, would they have to be, have a mental health now? Because of lack
the
of funding.
Diagnose.
Because yes, of right. lack of funding, right. there's no more, you know, just for the regular population.
Self-pay wasn't cutting it, you know.
Yeah, they can go to Smart Recovery, you know, and that's held at Ryerson.
Yeah, we have their local meetings and
it's
and
free
online.
Of charge. It's an alternative to AA. It uses cognitive behavioral therapy, some interventions, as AA doesn't do that.
Right.
like Facebook with a chat room for people mm-hmm. who are trying to manage their substance use in ways that don't get them into more trouble.
Yeah, and other than that, there's nothing else here in the Valley. There's the faith-based services.
Yeah, kind of limited.
Yeah, and
resources.
AA, you know, and
well, a lot of
it. And smart.
You know, the people from jail, I do see that they either had a substance abuse problem and got stuck with symptoms from, I don't know, it's like crystal meth, mm-hmm. you know, the psychosis, the paranoia. Or they were actually born or with they got the mental illness through something else and they try to cope with it mm-hmm. with drugs. So it's kind of all intertwined. And that's, I guess, my biggest...
It's difficult. It's hard.
It's my problem to try to...
Which came first?
I don't know. That's a good question. What do you think, Scott?
Typically the mental health stuff.
Mental health.
Because people will, from my experience, we're mostly working with kids, people will experiment. Now, typically a wide range of people experiment with substances as like this whole rite of passage, teenage, it's cool, whatever. You know, I got to be grown up. And people who are really dialed down and normal mm-hmm. will have negative experiences. And it's not really, quote-unquote, fun being drunk. You're dizzy, you're kind of reeling around. It's just a little bit too much.
Get sick.
Right?
Poor judgment.
Well, and you can get in trouble. There's already little baby consequences, like, you know, puking all over your mom's carpeting or whatever. So that...
Sounds like a personal...
That tends to be enough of a damper on the whole thing that people who it doesn't do anything for, it doesn't work for... tend to drop out. Now, there's other people whose brains are through either mental health stuff or through natural inclination, get lit up by these substances. You know, either it helps me to forget my problems or it puts me in a place that I really love and want to be in, which, you know.
I'd rather be in that state than having to...
Typically, about one out of eight people across mm-hmm. the board. I mean, some substances are a little bit stickier than others, you know.
Right.
You don't see too many... methamphetamine chippers running around, people who use little bits of a meth once in a while just to stay, you know, awake that once every 2 weeks, that
right.
tends to suck people into the black hole. But generally speaking, about one out of eight people who use substances will end up having some pretty significant issues related to
And then
to
they
the
end up over there with you.
And then they end up, yes.
With
and a lot of that,
yeah.
is, over half of that is fueled by mental health problems. So,
yeah.
So the chicken. Short
chicken.
This is Let's Talk About. We're sponsored by Imperial County Behavioral Health. We're here today with Joaquin Zambrano, and we're talking about the Jail Transition Supportive Services, whatever I messed that up, program. And
Supportive Transitional Services.
Yeah, thank you. See, guys with Mustangs, the acronym just falls right into place. That's how it works. So anyway, we will take a short break, top of the hour. We'll be right back with more show.
You're listening to Let's Talk About It, presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services. A 5 to 6 minute highlight podcast of the same show is available on KXORadio.com.
Welcome back. You are still listening to your weekly wellness radio, Let's Talk About It, with Scott and Maria. We are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUBO 88.7 Radio Bilingue. Our phone number here at the station is 337-8874.
I'm picturing long-time regular listeners getting up and dancing on the break song every time that it comes on every week, because it's A, a good song, and B, when you hear it over and over like that, it's kind of catchy. Welcome aboard. KXLRadio.com's got the podcast if you ever want to come back and catch up to this one on the other side. And we've got Joaquin Zambrano. He's a mental health rehabilitation technician, and he's working in one of the Mental Health Service Act specialty programs. The Jail Transition Supportive Backwards Acronym Program.
You almost got it. You almost
Jail.
Got it. Jail Supportive Transitional Services.
Okay. So we've got these people that are people with mental health problems that go to jail either because of or not because of their mental health, but they have mental health problems.
Correct.
And you go in there and you screen. You go into the jail 3 days a week. And hey, look, that's a really cool tattoo, by the way. I was just going to...
Thanks.
Is that authentic? Is that authentic, or did you
already.
Get one just to kind of fit in?
Yeah, you got to fit in there.
go to like the high end place and say, you know, I want a really primitive one, blue ink,
a classic. Yeah.
So you go there 3 times a week and get referrals from the medical staff.
Correct.
And then those people, as they're released from prison, are encouraged to wander on down to the clinic where they are assessed and then hopefully kind of guided through some sort of successful treatment process. Yes?
Right, yeah. I try to do the most to try to, I guess you could say, take them by the hand, you know, to ensure that they make it there.
As opposed to cuff them by the wrist.
It's,
right.
Yeah. I mean, but it's the numbers that you were talking about. I was thinking about it's about 350 plus right now in the jail. But you know, how many do you get?
Well, there's about like in total people that have you mean like treatment or mental mm-hmm. health problems there at the jail?
Yes.
That number, I'm not so sure about that statistic, but
It's because they get screened by they get assessed by the jail staff, correct?
Right.
And then
right.
they refer to you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, that was one of our problems before at juvenile hall and probation, because I worked with the youth. We were not getting very many referrals. But now things have changed. And we are getting a lot of referrals.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of referrals because we noticed that by the time they came to our WASP program, which is the Ward Access to Supportive Services, another MHSA program, just like a full service partnership program, mm-hmm. like the JSTS, We're getting these kids way too late into the system.
Right.
And most of them would be sent out. They would come to our program, WASP program, this week, next week, they were sent to placement. So we didn't have a chance to work with them at all. And we're still getting them, you know, very, very high-risk youth. But we're getting these other kids into our program because right now, let's say they're incarcerated at juvenile hall,
mm-hmm.
and they're asking for assessments. They're asking for assessments, and then we're linking them to the WASP program. But, yeah, there's so many kids there at juvenile hall that... But the numbers are like 24, 23, you know, at one time incarcerated. They're not 350.
Yeah, yeah, it's not a bigger population.
You walk in Monday morning, and the house is going, where's Joaquin? Hey, Joaquin,
no,
stop.
No. But the thing is, you know, a lot of those adults probably were in juvenile hall at one point.
Yes, indeed.
Yes,
yeah,
that
well,
could be possible.
You know, I read a study.
That's where I'm going at.
Prison study, not a jail study. So slightly different population, although less and less different as it turns out. What they did was they didn't study mental health disorders. They studied mental health, and they looked at large populations to see how many of those population had no mental health problem, and the number came in at a rousing 10%. So one
wow.
out of 10 of the jail population
did not have
any mental health problems at all. So you got pretty, it's a fertile field.
Yes.
Very, very.
Yes.
And what maybe at one time in a perfect world when we get all these kids' services on time, on a timely basis, you know, interventions, you know, our PEI, our prevention education intervention programs and a lot more prevention and EDIPP, the early detection, all these interventions that we're trying to start up, maybe one time there won't be. Maybe it will be people who are in jail will be maybe...
Never go there?
8 out of 10, you know, don't have a mental health.
So you want to shut the barn door before the horses get out. What is that? Proactive stuff.
Yes.
What's Joaquin going to do if he shows up and there aren't any people in the jail for him to help?
You know,
well, that'd be good. He can go somewhere else.
I'm going to help
hold
down
the floor.
But he
has to change his whole image. He's built this whole, I'm the jail guy.
Yeah, well, hopefully, you know, that we were talking earlier, there'll be more people with that change at the whole state penitentiaries and, you know, keeping people down here instead of sending them out.
You don't see a shortage of customers in the near future? Is that
no.
what you're
exactly. I see a rise.
Now, when people get out of jail, they've got some, in addition to their mental health concerns and in addition to this kind of burning desire to get that port of call thing in.
Well, yeah, because you get out of jail and you don't want anybody else to tell you anything else.
But they've got
because in jail they tell you when to eat,
yes.
when to wake up, when to go to sleep, when to take your meds, when to take a shower, when to everything. So when they get their liberty, that's
you
it.
Can't even pick what you're watching on TV.
That's it. You know you're.
Well, actually, no, they have cable. They have really good cable there.
They have cable.
Ouch. And they don't put on air conditioning and...
No, they have AC.
They rarely feed you.
No,
and
they
it's
do
non-nutritive
feed you.
Food.
No, yes, they feed you. But, you know, for other... The people, like, for... I don't know. But for me, I'm just putting my... I don't want anybody to tell me what to do.
Will they call me by my nickname instead of my... No. Okay, but let's go back to this point where they get out, because this is really the critical point of catching them, huh? I mean, once the trail goes cold, it must be more difficult to get people.
Yeah, sometimes...
They come out with big needs. Talk to me about when somebody gets out of jail, what kind of stuff is staring them at the face?
Some of it's homelessness. You know, some people are in there and, you know, I talk to them and it's like, okay, so where can I find you?
Well, I was paying rent. You know, I was renting somewhere. I was staying somewhere kind of whatever. And I just went away for 4 months and didn't pay any rent, and B, didn't contact my landlord because, you know, I was kind of limited there.
Right.
So that's gone, right? Mm-hmm. So they come out and they're like, whoa.
So then my list
where's
of
my
things
stuff?
To do starts to pile up because, you know, a large number of people don't have anywhere to live. Or like you said, they've lost placement due to being incarcerated or...
The family just said, you know what,
You messed up, you're out the door.
Also, family's probably not real willing to say, hey, yeah, come on, you could stay with us in the meantime while you get your feet on the ground.
Yeah. And then so... Things come in like, well, do you have an income? Are you on SSI? Did you lose your job? Can you work again? We obviously try to encourage these people to work. And this program is designed to teach them to get back on their feet, to be self-made again. You know, if they are disabled or they obviously qualify for like SSI benefits, then my job is to also link them to Social Security and try to help them out with such applications.
Are there additional hurdles for people who have been incarcerated in terms of getting SSI? Is that looked at like a little bit more suspiciously? Like, oh yeah, here's this guy's a criminal. You know, are you able to get SSI benefits for people whose disability has impaired their ability to function in society?
Yeah, I don't think that.
In other words, people who are entitled to them.
Yeah. No, I don't think it's difficult. You mean like if they get out and then they try to apply for the first time?
We know it's hard to get disability. I mean,
right.
The disability bank is like not wide open right now. You really have to fight for your right and your
appeal.
Entitlement.
Yes.
Do they have to fight harder? And is it harder for them because they've got homelessness and substance problems and everything else floating around in the air while you're trying to nail down SSI?
Well, as long as they can prove that, you know, they're... disabilities impair their...
They couldn't even prove the glove didn't fit. Now
they
have to prove a lifelong disability.
That they're impaired, like, you know, that they can't attend to their activities of daily living or...
But it's a lengthy process.
Does jail count as evidence? I mean, would jail be proof of my inability to cope with daily living? Or?
I don't know.
I don't think so. I mean...
No.
If you can't clean...
Let's say I have a disability that expresses itself in irritability and poor impulse control.
Because jail right now, Scott, is seen as somebody who's did wrong, not because of their mental health. There's a lot of people that are in jail because of their substance abuse. They have an addiction or they have a mental illness, but jail is not seen... You know, when you go to jail, it's because you did something wrong.
Right.
Well, irritability and poor impulse control can get you to that wrong place pretty quickly.
It's not seen as us, you know what? Oh, no, it's because, you know what? They probably have some addiction or maybe they have a mental illness. It's not seen that. It's still, they did something wrong.
So I'm drinking to manage my irritability, right? And because that, like, takes the edge off.
Right.
And it doesn't quite work, and I've got poor impulse control, so I get into a fight. I get into a fight. I got assault charges. Now I go to county for a while or whatever, and then I come out. Now I've shown that my irritability and my impulse control problems have caused a substantial impairment in my ability to function in the world because they ended me up in jail. Seems like that would count.
But don't get me wrong. I mean, there's some people that need to be in jail. You know, they just, but then there's other people that have never been diagnosed.
Yeah, the people who work there need to be there. They're not going to get paid. Hello.
I mean, people that never have gone, I see this a lot, that it's their first time in jail. And they do like a pre-screen, like, you know, the medical department does. And a lot of people put anxiety. They're feeling anxious because they're, you know, in there for the first time. You don't know what to expect. You don't know what you're going to do. You don't know what they're going to do to you. So then we follow up with those people, and like you said, and we go up to them, and it's like we kind of do a little mini assessment at the door. It's like, okay, so how are you doing now? He's like, well, no, I'm doing better. So usually, mm-hmm. mostly, they kind of like get into a more comfort zone. But a lot of people go in there with this anxiety thing. And
well, it's like the first day of school.
Yes, exactly.
First day of the job.
Yeah. And so, and then you have your population that says, no, well, I have this, and this. And I see Dr. So-and-so for this, and this, and this.
So it's like, here's my medication.
And here's my meds. Yes. Yes. And they, if you have your meds on you, they usually start your meds there. If you don't, then you have to go through the process of seeing a psychiatrist. And that's where a lot of people get upset. Just like, oh, I need my meds. It's like, well, it's not that easy. I mean, how do we know? How do we believe you? You know, so.
So if they have an existing history with Imperial County, then they would know.
Yeah. And that's kind of like the relationship that we have. I'm kind of like the middleman liaison that we get the information, interchange information.
In the referrals that you get, how many are pre-existing people and how many have history with behavioral health or some other local mental health provider versus how many are like fresh people that with no history?
I would say 3, 4 to 5 people have some kind of psychiatric treatment.
So most of them.
Right. Yeah, it's rare to find somebody that hasn't never had any kind of treatment and no one's ever attempted to help them.
So, that, you know, that kind of brings up a good reason for the program. If you've got people cycling in and out of jail, you know, costing me the taxpayer money and you the taxpayer money and everybody mm-hmm. else, and suffering because they're not, obviously it's probably not the funnest way to go.
Right.
Then breaking that cycle and getting those people the kind of grounding that they need to be successful in the community or at least, you know, pain free, mm-hmm. Seems like a pretty important and perhaps a difficult task. What do you do how do you get people free of this cycle? How do you break them out?
Mm-hmm. Well, I said that's one of the other goals besides preventing homelessness is that reincarceration. You know, like I said, we try to motivate these people to be self-made using like a CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy. Try to make them understand and learn how to do things on their own to self-empower themselves.
Where,
you know?
What's an example maybe of some area that they just keep tripping over their own feet? And is it that port of call? Could you use cognitive behavioral stuff to get people to avoid running out and reoffending on their first weekend away?
Yay,
I think a lot
freedom.
Of it has to do with their environment. Like if they get out of jail and they go to an environment that's full of crime, abuse, and this and that, then that's a tough...
Do they have a choice,
yeah.
or is that sometimes regardless they don't have anywhere else to go?
They don't have anywhere else to go. And that's like where they came from initially. So that's kind of like home to them. So, it, you know, I try to see them as much as possible to try to, you know, I know this is going around you. I know there's temptations. But you have to focus on, you know, like I said, the repercussions of doing that again and again and again. I always tell them the same things, like, do you like jail? Like, do you really mm-hmm. like jail? And they're like, oh, no, no, no. It's like, okay, well, then you have the power to stay out of it, you know. You have the will. I mean, you are free. You like your freedom, right? And they usually like, well, yeah, I like my mm-hmm. freedom. Okay. Well, so do I, you know. And sometimes it feels weird, like we're talking about age because, you know, I'm in my late 20s and I work with people that are in their 30s,
okay,
40s, 50s, you know, and it's like I'm there telling them these things. It's like, and I'm pretty sure they get a sense. It's like, this kid over here is trying to tell me what to do. It's
he
like,
doesn't
well,
know.
Yeah,
he
doesn't know.
Gone through it.
Exactly. You know, and it's like, hey, I'm like, you know, this person that's trying to help you out. I'm in no way trying to endanger your life. You know, I'm here for the positive things. And again, all voluntary.
Well, and I guess you could flip it around and say, so you, I may not know, but you totally do, right? Because you've figured it out. I can tell because you've only gone to jail like 8 times, and
yeah.
Now the probation yeah. officer is calling me again.
I learned from them. It's like I'm learning.
Well,
from
no, you could flip it around and say, okay, so what is the answer? How do you do this?
Right.
I may not know, and you're right. I haven't had to kind of turn my life around from a mental mm-hmm. health problem in jail. What seems to be the right thing to do?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And now it's back on them.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is, like, we try to prevent also this higher level of care.
Which means, like, hospitalizations.
Hospitalizations, yes.
Is that common? Is that something that happens? I mean, because ultimately I'm guessing that they leave jail with a lot of conditions on their behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't like keep up with those conditions, I'm not sure that we would come with some sort of let's help you as much as we would come with let's put you back in jail.
Right. Yeah, I know with my program, the program in the JSDS, I haven't seen a lot of hospitalizations from the clients that are in the program. I see a lot of more reincarcerations, you know. I guess you can consider that a higher level of care for them, but no, hospitalizations, not so much.
Does that reincarceration become a learning moment, or is it something people just habituate to over time? You know, it goes that way sometimes.
Well, hey, you know, so for some people, I don't know, but
three
for some
meals
people,
in a car.
Yeah, exactly. They find, hey, you know what, at least in jail, I'll get some food and a place to sleep.
It's boring, got a place to sleep, chill my, you know, make plans.
Yeah sometimes.
And you, I've heard that. So that's, and you hear that. You know, and you, they will tell you that, at least in jail, I'll get food
free
and a
healthcare
place.
And what, what are they saying? They're saying, this is the best I can hope for. This is all I can aspire to. I'm okay with this level of performance. I'm okay with this level of being because I don't trust myself to do more or be more. That's kind of scary.
And kind of like they told me when I first got into this environment. It's like, well, you can't save the world. You know, you can't save everybody. You know, some people are going to, you know, respond to you, to what you're trying to provide for them. And some people are just going to be like, eh.
I guess what's more scary is you've got people walking around thinking they can't save themselves.
Yeah.
You know, thinking, this is it. Dude. This is, I'm a chief hood with a mean streak.
This is my peak.
And that's what I'm going to be. And, you know, if I can get some Seroquel while I'm doing it, so much the better.
Yeah.
That you know, it's interesting that people can get to that point and that's all right.
Yeah. And like I said, with this program, we have to link them to, you know, kind of like the employment services that we have here, like One Stop and all that stuff. You know, we have.
Is that discouraging? I mean, we live in a place with 30% unemployment. How many people who have to write explanations on their job apps get interviewed?
Yeah, they do get discouraged a lot. They say the same thing. It's like, well, you know, why am I going to look for a job when there is no jobs? Or look at me, I'm, you know, getting a job. I'm like, you're never going to know if you don't try. I mean, even if it means cutting boxes or, you know what I mean? You're not going to get, or you're not going to do what maybe you did in the past, but.
So part of it may be just finding leverage and finding some sort of initial place to work.
Correct.
Is the State Department of Rehab, I mean, because now you've got people with mental health problems, is the State Department of Rehab or other types of agencies that help people with disabilities, do they kind of jump in and say, you know, let's give you some supported employment?
Yeah, actually I do. I have an individual right now that's trying to get into being a security guard. And so State of DOR, Department of Rehab, is trying to help them out, try to get in, like, their guard card and all that good stuff to try to find employment, you know. So,
good.
So, yeah. So we all work together. We work with the DOR, the Department of Rehab, and, like I said, all the other agencies that try to – I even try to link them over to, like, those temporary agencies, you know, because you never know.
Yeah, daily labor, baby.
Yeah. It's like – I'm not going to lie. I used to do that in the past, you know, and it's like, hey – it works. So instead of having to steal or commit crimes to make, you know.
Sling some drugs.
Just,
yeah. So.
Nice. Stuff. Now, success stories.
I do.
So many that one.
So many. Mm-hmm. No, actually.
Well, this is a difficult population, you know. Just.
I have a client that I've had ever since I started the program. So this is 3 years plus. And I'm not going to say that he hasn't, you know, fallen back into jail. But he's doing good. I mean, he's being monitored, which is a good thing, on his medication. And he's always grateful to see me, you know, and he always thanks me. And he goes, you know what, if it wasn't for you, I'd probably be dead. Because I kind of found this guy, like, living in an abandoned trailer, you know, with nothing, you know, so, and he kept going in and out of jail, in and out of jail, and he just looked totally different, and he was lost. I mean, his mind was just somewhere else, because there was no medication, there was no treatment, so I said, okay, so, you know, I did it, and throughout these years, he's been stable, and he sees me, and he goes, hey, what's going on, you know, and it's like, it feels good to know that you've, you know, provided this impact to somebody's life.
What happened to his family?
actually, when I met him, his mother was still alive, but she passed away not long ago. Mm. And then the brothers, they're on their own, you know? So it's kind of like there's not a lot of unity. So everybody's on their
survival
own.
Mode.
Survival, yeah, survival mode. And so he basically just has the people. I mean, he lives in a small town, so they kind of, everybody knows each other. So they know him. And so.
But he's carved out some safe spot, some safe place right now.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He lives in a nice home. The people he lives with are supportive of him and try to keep him in check, kind of. So, yeah, we appreciate that, too. It all falls into that whole support kind of system.
Yeah, the people who keep me in check, I appreciate them to death, right? Because that's what we're here to do for each other,
right.
Ultimately.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, so what happens with the other success stories is that, you know, this is a jail. This program is where they could basically, I guess, graduate from, if you can, you know, say it that way. And then it's not as...
you don't grant them parole or anything.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Huh? But you still have to check it. No, you know, they get transferred over to another program, the adults program in RCP. And so I guess basically they don't need that case management service that I provide. Mm-hmm. And then that's good, though. You know, it's like...
Once they're okay on the medication, mm-hmm. and...
Yeah, and it's like, well, you know what? And I always tell them, it's like, if you do, you're doing so well that you might graduate soon. You know, and they always laugh. But that's how it kind of is. That's the way we see it, you know. And so it feels good to put that final paper and say, oh, successfully met his goals or her goals. And that's it.
And with that, Joaquin, you have successfully met your goal, which was to come on the radio show today and inform us about the. If people want to know more about this program or have, you know, friends or family members who they may consider, you know, hey, yo, what about this person? Referral or something.
Right.
Who do they call? Who are you going to call?
They could call the Adult Outpatient Clinic, area code 760-482-2100. And then just ask for me, Joaquin Zambrano, or the JSTS program.
If they say they heard about it on Let's Talk About It, would you give them a ride in your really cool car?
No.
No. Sorry.
It is such
God,
a...
Thing.
It's a one-seater.
You always want to do that. I go, you know what? We should... If you get... You know, next
if
time...
you don't ask, you never know.
You know what? Next time it goes, yeah, you get something. Ask Scott. He'll give you something. Yeah,
my car's totally uncool.
Rocks.
So
he'll worry. Give you some rocks. Polished rocks.
Some polished rocks.
Rocks for sale.
We'll have some rocks here.
Nice. All right. Thanks for coming aboard today, Joaquin.
I appreciate it. Yeah.
And again, if you like the show today or you have people you think may want to dial in and catch up to this, you can catch up to it at KXLradio.com where they have it on podcast.
Yes.
With our executive producer, Mario Espinosa, is already cutting out all the lame things that we say that are peripheral to the central discussion and editing it and getting it up there.
Also, remember this weekend the cattle call. So don't forget about the cattle call and don't forget about veterans. You know, thank them and honor them and remember them that, you know, we're here because of them. So, thank you.
Well
thank
said.
You, veterans.
Absolutely. Have a good weekend.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Let's Talk About It, heard each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KUBO 88.7 FM, Radio Bilingue. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.